You're listening to Rocket Knight.
This is Charisse with Rocket Knight, and today we are speaking with Taylor Roberts. He is a guitarist with Taproot, and he's lead singer, guitarist, songwriter with his band called Writing with Killers. Last December, he released his debut album called Full Circle. How you doing, Taylor?
Charisse, I'm wonderful. As you can see, I just got out the shower, so I'm feeling nice and renewed and refreshed, but I'm doing good.
Excellent.
Getting over being sick as well, but I feel much, much better.
I'm glad you're feeling better. I wanted to tell you that I do know all about you. I listened to 5 hours of interviews with you speaking to other people. So
I'm so sorry you had to listen to me talk that long.
I know we're not going to talk about the same stuff. I know all about your eating a squirrel. And I know all about your interest in World War II, and you were an extra in the Dirt, the Motley Crue film. I mean, you have a really interesting background, but I think we should talk about your music.
Yeah, I mean, that's why we're here, right?
Exactly.
I'd love to talk to you about that.
Although you are a colorful character, I want to mention to people that Taylor's from Mississippi, and he has made his way north. He's been living in Michigan, the Detroit area, since about, 2017? Is that correct?
Closer to 2019. Okay. 2019. I'm basically around my 5-year anniversary right now.
And I got to see him perform over Labor Day weekend at the Arts Beats and Eats Festival in Royal Oak. And I was very impressed, and I thought, you know, I need to talk to this guy. So here we are.
So I'm really glad you enjoyed the set. That really means a lot. And I feel like that was a really important set for us too, because I mean, as you're aware, Arts Beats and Eats is a very prominent festival for Metro Detroit, and to get invited to play, and that was our first time playing there. And the fact that they gave us such a prime time slot was, you know,
Saturday night.
Saturday night, 8 o'clock, you know, perfect time. It was perfect, you know. Like I'm very appreciative to Jamie and Paulie and everybody over there that made that happen. That meant a lot, you know, because that was a very, very good time slot to get. First time playing too, you know, like wow.
Who was playing with you on the Saturday night? That wasn't the regular bass player, right?
No, so that was actually James Laskew, and he and I have been writing together since I moved up here. So in a way, he kind of is one of the original bass players, but he was never a fully fledged like touring member or anything. And our regular bass player, Chris, was on his honeymoon with his wife. So anytime Chris can't be there, James is my first phone call. And I love making music with that man. He's one of my favorite human beings I've ever met. He and his wife and his baby, I love that family dearly. So anytime I can borrow him from them, I take that chance.
What was funny was during your performance, I guess, I don't know if it was his parents or what, but they were live streaming or doing like a FaceTime call with him and his wife and baby, because I was watching it. I thought, oh, that's so cute. He's seeing daddy on stage.
So Jesse and Vola were still in Austin, Texas. I flew James up from Austin for that show to come play. That's how much I love him. That's how much I love being on stage with him. Like I was like, I don't care how far away you are. I got your flight. Stay with me. Let's rip a show together. And that's what we did. So they couldn't obviously be up here for that. So we made sure that we got them, you know, the next best thing, which live right in front of them.
I didn't know that. I have been listening to Full Circle on YouTube Music. I think I listened to it about maybe 5 or 6 times.
Wow. Thank you.
Yeah. No, I've been listening
What
to
you
it in the
think?
car.
Honest opinion.
I really like it. I have an earworm for a couple of the songs, Fading
Okay.
Away. It won't.
Yeah.
I mean, I go to sleep at night, I'm thinking of it, and then when I wake up, I'm thinking of it. That means that's infectious. That, you know,
Thank
the
you.
chorus is really infectious.
That one was a that's a hard one. I and funny enough, when you saw us, that was the first time we'd ever played it live. And I got choked up on the second verse of that song. Like, I don't know if you heard my voice break a couple times, but that one's about my grandmother and her struggle with dementia. And the first real tour I ever got to go on was in 2013, weirdly enough, opening for Taproot. And I remember, and I call her Mimi. Her name's Margaret Roberts. But I remember Mimi called me and she was like, "Don't go." And I was like, "Oh, it's not a big deal." I was like, "I'll be back in like 3 weeks. Like, this is gonna be fun. We'll talk every day." And we were talking every day on the road. And then in the middle of that tour, the phone call stopped, and I was like, "Oh, that's weird," you know. And I've always had a very, very strong connection to my grandmother, and towards the end of the tour, I kept calling the house, and I finally got my grandpa, and he's like, "Oh, she's in the hospital," and I was like, "What? What do you mean she's in the hospital?" And I guess there was a brain aneurysm, and she fell, and then when I got home from tour, that's when the dementia started setting in, and I mean, it was never the same after that, and you know, that had always really weighed heavy on my mind. And when Dave and I, you know, started, you know, getting with Matt LaPlante to record, you know, Matt brought up a conversation that he and I had had years prior. And this is how I knew that Matt actually cared about me. He was like, "Dude, you used to talk about your grandmother's dementia, and I've been waiting to write this song with you." And he initially, like, he kickstarted that idea, or you know, reignited that idea, because I was recording with my old band, and I had this idea about writing about it, but it got shot down by my old singer. So when he brought it back up, I was like, "Oh my God, we have to dive into this." And it's a very emotional song to write, record, and perform, you know, because it's about my favorite woman in the world, you know, and she's not who she was at all. And those conversations that we have, they last 30, 45 seconds, and we just go round and round, but it doesn't bother me to do that because I love my grandma and I want to talk to her. So that was, you know, the way that I knew how to really, you know, get that out of my head and heart was to put it into a song, you know, and that's how Don't Fade Away just kind of came to be.
You put your heart into writing the song and also performing it when I saw you perform it.
Inside a shell.
I was really shocked when I heard that you just started to sing. I thought for sure that you had been a singer for years. I mean, I know you're a guitar player, but you sing really well.
Thank you. I really appreciate that because I'm still, you know, like I'm still, I would say very, not like super new and green to it, but I'm definitely not a master by any stretch of the means, and I'm still learning new things every day. And I mean, I just quit smoking marijuana. I'm basically 3 weeks free of that right now, and I am noticing a huge difference in my air control, my ability to hit notes, and like my throat's not scratchy after I scream, after I sing for, and you know, that set that we did, that was the longest set I've ever performed. I've never done a 75 minute set live. And the fact that I was able to make it through it, and I wasn't hoarse, and I was able to hold a conversation with you and with other people that I was meeting. And then that night I was like, oh my God, my voice is still here. Like it's been really cool, you know, going down this journey of becoming a vocalist and learning to sing and play guitar at the same time, because that's a big challenge. And I got to a point of where it's like, well, I like singing, I like being on stage, and I like my guitar more than I like smoking weed. So that's kind of where we're at now, you know. So thank you, that means a lot. Like it really does, because when you start singing and you start hearing your voice like for the first time on record with all the harmonies and the leads and stuff, it's like, oh, you know, like it's cringy sometimes, because you know,
you sounded great live. I mean, I've been listening to the recorded stuff. Live, you have kind of a nice, almost gritty, like a little raspiness to it, but when I hear the recording, it's not there, and I like that. I like one of my favorite singers is Paul Rodgers.
Okay.
You know, Bad Company.
Yeah.
And the albums do not do him justice at all. It sounds too smooth and engineered. But when I hear him sing live, my God, it's like he's from another planet. It has this kind of texture raspiness. And your live sounds really good.
Thank you. Yeah. I'm very self-conscious about that.
No, and I always wonder when you guys do all the screams and stuff, how do you not be hoarse? I mean, if I talk too much, like stay up late, I have a sore throat. Do you suck lozenges or drink tea, or what do you do?
So what I have been doing is I've basically been, you know, really laser focusing on, you know, my nutrition even more so. Like I try not to drink a lot of coffee too much these days. Like, and that's one of the things I'm also kind of kicking. And, you know, I'm trying to make that more of like a once a week or twice a week kind of a treat, you know, like, all right, you had a good day, you had a good week, get a cup of coffee from your favorite spot. But I drink a lot of green tea with Manuka honey. And that is a
from
product
New Zealand? Is that from New
yes.
Zealand? Australia? Yeah.
Yes.
I'm a honey freak.
My God.
I know all about honey.
It's,
yeah.
It's like $80 for like this tiny little thing. But my
Go
God.
To Costco. Like, go to Costco.
But like I can tell the difference versus like the quote unquote local raw honey that you get, you know, from the grocery store. Like there is a difference, you know, and I'm doing the plus 26 whatever, because once you get past like plus 20, there's different grades of Manuka honey, and you start to get into the medical grade version of that. And I've been using that to kind of rehab my vocal cords, to get rid of all the smoke that's been kind of sitting there the last couple of years in the film that it's created. I've been more active in doing daily vocal exercises and warm-ups. And I drink a lot of water before I go on stage, while I'm on stage, after I'm done. I try to do vocal cool downs. Like I've really gotten serious about my vocal health because I want longevity in this business. And, I found that by taking proper care of my voice and eating proper things that don't, inhibit what I can do whenever I do have to scream, it doesn't shred my vocal cords anymore the way that it used to. So, I do a lot of tea and honey, a lot of water. I don't do sodas. And if my voice is feeling a little scratchy, I might do a hottie toddy, with some honey whiskey. And I don't like to drink a lot, period. But like, I don't really drink before stage. And if I do, like I said, it's that little shot of whiskey with hot tea and ginger, and that's about it.
Now I want to go have a hot toddy after mentioning
Right?
all of that.
Right?
I'm a honey freak and a ginger freak, so two things I like. Now I want to talk more about your music. Novelty. I love that song. And I
Thank you.
notice the engineering of it, they use strings. It
Yes.
really sounds full and kind of melancholy and sad even.
So what's wild about that is one of my best friends in the world, George Mason. And funny enough, George and I were at the same music store that I literally took guitar lessons at, grew up in, ended up working at. George taught violin there. He would work there occasionally, and we started working together, I'd say probably almost 10 years back. We did a song together, and he and I like literally sat in his studio for days and just composed together, and I had the best time with him. And then when we started writing Novelty, I basically went through a little bit of a heartbreak, and it was like this weird love triangle thing that happened, but I was like this plaything for this other party. I don't need to name names or anything like that. It does nobody any good. But I'll never forget feeling that way. It's like, oh, well, you're not actually into me. I'm just a plaything while you're doing this other thing over here. And that song kind of materialized. We ended up rewriting all the lyrics. Matt was like, this is great, but you need to rewrite the words. We need to make it more poetic. And so we did. And it was originally just going to be an acoustic song because it was just that good. We were that in love with it. And then I had shown it to some friends of mine at 97.9 CPR, Scott Fox and Kenny Vess, and they're like, you need to make this into a big rock song. And I was like, all right, well, we need some violins, so I'm going to call George. And I sent George just the acoustic, but he never heard the big rock drums. He never heard the big rock guitars or the bass or anything. And when I sent him the song, he called me and he was like, this is a really good song. And it's kind of funny you sent me this because I'm in the middle of a divorce. And which blew my mind because George and his wife had been together forever, and he had just left the Gulf Coast. He was restarting his life. And so he was in, I would say, worse of a headspace than I was in, and everything he pulled out was perfect. I didn't tell him to. The only thing I had him basically translate is on the chorus, the I had written that as a guitar part, but I was like, follow this and then add layers to it. But the rest of it, that's all George. And that's his sadness coming through mixed with mine.
It's melancholy, and I love the fact that it's acoustic. I think it's the only song that you have acoustic guitar, right?
Yeah.
In it. And I like that because it's a ballad, and We all have been in that position where we feel used or taken for granted or whatever. And I think it will hit people that haven't heard it will hit a chord with a lot of people.
I hope
Oh,
so, you
yeah.
know, and that's all I want to do with my music is reach other people and help them realize that they're not alone. 'Cause when I was growing up without my dad and I was getting picked on for being the nerdy comic, nu metal guitar kid, you know, like all those bands, they said what I didn't know how to at the time, you know, and I was like, okay, well, maybe I'm not this weird freak that everyone's making me out to be. Maybe I do have a reason to be sad, and maybe my sadness is justified. And I, you know, there's a reason I feel this way, and that's the whole goal, you know, is to help people and make them realize they're not alone. So, thank you.
Another song that I really like that starts off really staccato, I almost could dance to it, and the drums are great, is What Comes Next.
Yeah, that was a
Like,
really, really fun
it's
song
kind of
to.
staccato in the beginning, and da 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 da, you know, the beat.
So I'm gonna lay some cards out on the table here, but that's like, so Matt and I essentially kind of took that from Billie Eilish. I can't remember the exact song, but we were big fans of that record, and Or maybe he was that the bad guy that da da
Yeah, I
ba
think it's bad
ba
guy. Yeah.
ba da ba da ba. Like, but you know, we made it our own.
Well,
But like,
I'm sure she took it from somebody too.
I mean,
Yeah.
everything's borrowed from something. I mean, and honestly, we all just need to write big old apology letters to Black Sabbath and sorry for stealing everything that you guys pioneered. You know, but we had such a good time making that song, and I was working for a really big corporate music store that's still around. And don't get me wrong, like it wasn't all bad because I made some really great friends. I increased my knowledge base. I made some great networking connections. Hell, it led me to being endorsed with Gibson Guitars to a degree. But there was a point to where I realized that I was just a number. I was just an ass in a seat, so to speak. It didn't really matter who I was as an individual. And then I realized that it was slowly starting to consume my entire life because there was this Kool-Aid that they would let you drink. And oh my God, everything's amazing. It's this great world that you have in front of you. But at the same time, I was gaining weight again because I believe I told you I lost almost 100 pounds. And
Lot.
I ended up gaining almost 25, 30 pounds working there. And I saw this vicious cycle that so many people get trapped in. I wasn't playing my guitar. I wasn't paying attention to me. I was getting unhealthy again. And I saw the forest beyond the trees, so to speak. And so I basically had to fight tooth and nail to get out of it. And the person that I was with at the time was so mad at me for quitting. And it's like, dude, I'm not this corporate suit who wants to sit in front of a computer all day. Like I've got things to do. I want to move and use my body. I want to be active and I want to think. And you know, I can remember so many times because you know how musicians will talk to each other, like
Yeah.
buzzwords kind of become part of, you know, the lingo, especially if you're in this business long enough. And like I would get in trouble for using not appropriately, but it's not like I was every other word was an F-bomb or whatever, but
That's how I speak all the
right,
time, actually.
exactly, you know,
I'm
in the real
controlling
world.
myself.
Right, you know, like
Yeah.
for the interview and stuff, but you know, in the real world, like that's just how we all
You
talk
mean
with
they
one
actually
another.
told you there not to curb the F-bombs? Really?
Oh yeah. Oh, I got
Oh my
called
God.
into a meeting with two managers,
Oh,
and they're
that's like
like
high
some.
school.
Oh, they were like some people and they called it neighborhoods, and they were like some people in your neighborhood have complained about your language, and I was like, and I remember I looked at both of them, and I was like, didn't you guys say that we're supposed to talk to our peers if we have an issue with one another? I was like, I find it strange that they had to call quote unquote mom and dad and waste all of our times for me to be in here. Like I was a rebellious little shit when I was there. It's like I have a problem with authority like that because no, dude, like when I was growing up, I was on a heavy dose of Ritalin and you know, I was a zombie. I wasn't in control of my life. So as I've gotten older and I've gotten away from that, like I have a problem with authority like that. And it was whack. It was dumb. And when I finally broke out of it, I was like, I gotta write a song about this experience because never again. Because I felt me slipping away from myself again, and it terrified me. Terrified me.
Pledge allegiance to the corporate throne. Shut your mouth and be a good drone. Keep me standing on my tippy toes. Work all day with nothing to show. This is fine. This is fate. It's a step out of.
I'm thinking about the F-bomb. I mean, everything you hear on TV, music, it's just a word. It's just a way of venting, expressing, you know.
And not only that, but it's like, if you're in a comfortable conversation with somebody and, you know, you're not using it aggressively, you're just like, oh, blah, what the fuck, or whatever.
I say it all the time. Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like you create a level of, I don't want to say trust, but you're like, okay, I can talk to this person. I can have a real, true conversation. It's not fake. It's not this, you know, oh, follow the script. You got to be whatever have you. It's like, no, I'm a real human being, and real people say fuck. We do. We just do.
The more I know and like a person, the more I swear. If I don't swear, that means I feel uncomfortable and I'm worried about what they might think of me. And
I trust the guy that doesn't say fuck. I don't trust the guy that doesn't say.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, you know what I mean? Like, if you don't cause that, like, something's
up. They're holding back.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So, and so... That's where that song came from, was just the whole fakeness of the corporate culture and just, again, me losing myself to that. And that's not who I am at all. I mean, I've got red hair now, you know, and,
yes,
you know, I've had this for almost 2.5 years now, but it's like, I feel unhinged, but I also feel like I'm me, and this wouldn't fly in a corporate office setting.
I wanted to talk to you more about, well, I was going to ask you, since I know you did work for that corporate place, I've bought equipment from that particular, quite a lot of equipment from that.
I still do, man.
Yeah. The prices are good.
And
yeah.
He still hooks me up. And plus, you know, it's good to.
I've bought my Zoom recorder, amplifiers, just a bunch of equipment. And I wanted to ask you, I discovered the iRig 2.
Yeah.
And what, as a professional, do professionals actually use that, or do you use just effects pedals?
I mean, like, it's the iRig is one of those things, like, if you're on the go and you can't have a little practice amp or something like that, it's a small means of getting your rehearsal in without having a little mini amp. I don't really use one, but I use my DAW and my interface to rehearse at the house. Like, I've got the Universal Audio Apollo X4, and that's what I use but I'm also demoing and stuff as well. So I just kind of, that's my practice amp is my recording setup.
Yeah, because in the old days, I mean, we all had wah-wah pedals, effects pedals, distortion pedals, and it's expensive. And when I finally saw, oh my God, I could use my iPad and software and I have all these cool effects and it doesn't cost much. Well, I just wondered, is that what the pros use, or is that just what people?
I mean, anybody, you know, whether it's pro or beginner, like I know a lot of guys that use rigs like that so they don't have to carry a little small practice amp, you know, it just makes... It's for light travel, you know, but anybody and everybody uses it. You know, I'm just not one of them. But that doesn't mean anything either.
I was curious, too. You mentioned, is it Matt LaPlante? Is that his
yes.
name?
Matthew
LaPlante. He is in Wisconsin or some other. I tried to look him up.
He just moved. I think he's in South Carolina. He's been there, I want to say, within the last year or so. Mm-hmm.
Is that who you recorded your music with?
Yes. So I've been recording with him since about 2012. And he did the first record. Even though obviously I haven't even begun announcing or teasing it, the second record is already done. But I did, that's the first time in over 10 years that I've used a new producer. And that was with Jacob Herman, but we can get to that later, but yes.
And that's what I wanted to talk about is Jacob Herman and how you got into meeting him and Sweden and all that stuff.
You're listening to Rock at Night.
The introductory song, Get On Down, is from blues artist Billy Bass Alford. Look for his music at ReverbNation.com.
To be continued, look for part 2,
of our interview with Taylor Roberts of Writing with Killers.